Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
Hello, everyone. This is Brandon. This is the first episode I'm recording in quite a while. I've actually recorded a few, but they're in the vault, haven't been released yet. So if you remember 6-7 months ago, I started the podcast under Mormons on Mushrooms called Roughly Stoned. And it specifically went into the psychedelic origins of Mormonism. It was awesome. It was super fun. We did about 5 or 6 episodes with different experts on the subject. And at the same time, we started filming a documentary on the same subject. Now, fast forward 6-7 months since the launch of that podcast, many things have happened in my life and I've kind of disappeared from the podcast. So about the time that the podcast launched, I got laid off from work. I mentioned this in a few of the episodes. And right about the time they got laid off from work, my marriage, which was headed toward divorce, had some things happen, and the process of divorce was accelerated. And so I'm still dealing with both of those, being laid off, and the results of the divorce process, they're still unfolding, but it's well underway. I'm in a better place now, but it was rough. It was rough for shout out to whoever has gone through a divorce or is going through a divorce. It's not fun. It's not easy. In the process, we've also continued on the documentary and we are nearly finished and it is shaping out to be about 40 minutes. Very proud of where it is. A handful of people have seen it. When I say a handful, maybe 5 or 6 so far. We're hoping to test it in an audience, just get some group feedback sometime in the next few weeks. And then we're going to make the final touches on it and then we'll see where it goes. But very excited about the documentary, what the prospects are for that. Who knows where it will lead. Okay. So documentary, divorce, being laid off. But in the process of all of these things, I have met some fascinating people, had some amazing experiences, and I'm really excited about where my life is headed and also where the podcast is headed as one component of it. Now, one of the people that I've met, and I met him about a month ago, and you'll get into the story in the episode of how this happened, is a man named Jadren Onby. Jadren grew up Mormon in Utah, but he is now a legally certified psychedelic guide or facilitator in the state of Oregon, where psychedelics are decriminalized. He even talks about how they're technically legal, or these mushrooms are legal in the state of Oregon. He was one of the first people to get legally certified as a facilitator. He works at different facilities in Oregon, all of them on the up and up. And so you can go to Oregon and have a guided psychedelic session with Jadren as your facilitator. And there are no legal ramifications. There's no risk legally for it. You'll be in a safe environment. And if you have the means, the time and the financial means to do it, and you have curiosity about psychedelic use and you come from a Mormon background, he may be a great match for you. So it's a really good opportunity to learn about this. Speaking of that, we've also recognized a big hole in the psychedelic industry for the state of Oregon, and we have launched a website. You're going to hear in the interview that it hasn't launched yet, but it has launched. Okay, at the time that we recorded it, it hadn't, but it's live now, and that website is goodfacilitators.com. Goodfacilitators.com is a place you can go to find out about what a guided psychedelic session is like, why you may want to use a guide, and what the legal state of psychedelic use is in the state of Oregon. You can also fill out a form to give some basic information about yourself including your contact information and your psychedelic use history, your curiosities about psychedelics. And then what will happen is that you'll be contacted by someone who will then pair you with the right guide. If you want to continue, they'll pair you with the right guide for your specific needs. You can then have a call with that guide and determine if they're the right person for you. So that's goodfacilitators.com, goodfacilitators.com. Also, if you happen to be a legally certified psychedelic guide in the state of Oregon, or another place that this may happen by the time that you listen to it, you can contact goodfacilitators.com and you can be one of the people that is featured and available on the website. So this is really designed for people that have the financial means and also the time means to do this. We're well aware that this does not include everyone. And that's one of the downsides of the psychedelic industry right now as it stands. It is expensive to come to Oregon. There's a sliding scale. Jadren's going to talk about it. Guides will work with you to fit according to what your financial abilities are. But it's not cheap. But with that said, there are underground psychedelic guides wherever you are, and you just need to start talking to people. Jadren also talks about how you could possibly find some of those people, because psychedelic use under the proper conditions with the proper people can be very beneficial to people. So it just happens to be legal in Oregon. You can find a guide there, but there are other ways to do so as well. So this is the interview with Jadren, former Mormon, psychedelic legally certified guide in the state of Oregon. It's going to be a 4 or 5 part series. Here is episode 1, and hope you enjoy. You said that you watched the documentary. Let me know. Initial thoughts. What were you thinking?
It was cool. A lot of it made sense. A lot of it made a lot of sense. One thing that I was curious about, I want more just context on just like how, what the feeling of the time was more like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To understand, like, you know, because like he says a couple of times, I think it's Cody that says a couple of times, like other religions, other churches, other spiritual yada yadas, they were all doing psychedelics at that time, and that is well known.
Yeah.
But like, I want to know more about that, because there is this like whole, yeah, like the Freemasons and all that stuff. Like, they're probably doing all the same stuff. And did Joseph Smith just get it from them and that whole thing?
Or
is he special?
Okay. So the reason why I'm typing on my phone right now, I'm taking a note because I don't have a pencil and paper on me right now. But there have only been like 5 people outside of those working on the documentary that have seen it to this point. So, you know, and it's like, it's what you saw was rough cut 3. And so right now we're going into the fine tuning, but we still have room to make like a major adjustment here or there. So, you're the second person that's brought up that point. So, cool. It's a good
2 of 5.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good comment. So we've got to look into that. And also, the narration sections that Cody, he's in front of a wall of wine when he's doing that. So we've got to re-record those, because man, we recorded that and it was after Cody had worked a 10-hour shift and he had to clean the restaurant after. And then we shot it. And so we shot it like starting at like midnight. And so he's exhausted.
He was really tired.
And then he's got, you know, life's happening to him and all of that. And so he's like, when he watched that cut, he's like, I feel like I'm just trying to get through it. Like I don't like that. We got to re-record that. And it's like, this is like the tiniest budget ever. We can't re-record, but like, we have to, I know, we'll figure it out. We'll do it. But it's like, and you know, that's kind of the battle they have going in my mind, but we're going to reshoot it next week. We're going to reshoot that sequence, which gives us the opportunity for him to then add more narration and context that it's not just the Mormons who are doing this. This was happening in the area. And it's probably not a coincidence that a massive amount of American religions came out of that area at that time. So what were the people doing over there?
Yeah. Yeah. Like when did we really start as Americans? When did we start fucking around and finding out about this? Because all this stuff about like the Harvard stuff, like that's all very, very cool. But like, yeah, it's like, yeah, was this pretty mainstream? Because like I know that like there's like even like Abraham Lincoln wrote about smoking cannabis.
Okay.
Yeah. But like, yeah, but like, yeah, like what are we like? Yeah. Anyway, that it's very the timeline on this is very hazy for me. And how Americans interacted with substances in general.
Yeah, I mean that's a huge thing. I mean this is the Mormon spectrum of it. Okay, and we can go in depth and make like a 10-part miniseries on the Mormon spectrum of it. But really, the goal is here's Mormonism. Hey, can you think a little bit about where else this may apply and start doing research there? And then pretty soon we've got look at this whole history and psychedelics and magic and whatever are a huge component of human history up until like 150 years ago, right around there, then it kind of disappears. So what happened?
Right. Cool. Interesting.
Yeah. So
interesting.
Yeah. You know, another one, I'm curious if you know anything about this, because I haven't looked into it yet. I'm deep into the Mormon origins, but one that I want to look into is Martin Luther King Jr. Have you read anything about him?
I mean, I have a couple of books like near me physically, but like, what do you mean?
Okay. Have you ever heard of Martin Luther King Jr.? Do you know what he did?
I've heard of, yeah, he's interesting. He's like a more angry Malcolm X.
So Martin Luther King Jr., and I haven't read it, and I want to read it. He wrote his PhD thesis on the mystery schools, like ancient Christianity and their ties to mystery schools. And it's like, how were you writing this in like 1950? Like what were you doing? Like, how did you even come across this subject?
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's very interesting too. No, I had no idea about that. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's something you'd think I would have heard about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like of the cross section of things that I'm into, like that. You'd think I'd know that. That's right. I'm gonna look into that later.
I've got to give a disclaimer right now because I'm like, I'm certain I've heard this, but like, I've never looked it up. I've heard it happen. Like, I've come in conversation like three times. And I'm like, is there more than one Martin Luther King Jr.? Because this can't possibly be the Martin Luther King Jr. that we're talking about. He's studying about early Christianity's ties to mystery schools. This is wouldn't a lot of people know about this?
Right. Yeah. It makes sense. I know him and his dad, like that there's a reason he's named that.
Okay.
And like, because they were so into early Christianity, so into Lutheranism. So that makes sense. Like, I know that like Martin Luther King Jr., like, or Martin Luther, his dad took him to Germany to go like see the churches and stuff. Like when he was a kid, I think he had already been to Europe.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Now I'm trying to remember if I'm thinking about the wrong thing. Now this is a podcast where all the credibility has gone right out the window in the very first.
Let's see what other fake information we could come up with on Martin Luther King Jr. right now, huh? So,
let's do what white guys do best.
So with that, all right. Okay, so this is an episode, I guess we'll call it Roughly Stoned, even though it's so, you know, we have Roughly Stoned, we have like five or six, I sent a few of them to you, Jadrin, but like, it's specifically about the psychedelic history of Mormonism and talking about that. This is going to have, we're not going to talk about that much in this one, but we'll still give the title of a Roughly Stoned episode because Mormons on Mushrooms is more for Doug and Mike, that's their thing, but this is kind of a cross between the two. So this is our new episode with we're talking to Jadrin. And Jadrin, I don't know how you say your last name. Can you say it for me?
Ownby.
Ownby. Because I was like,
Jadrin Ownby. It's a real pickle.
Jadrin Ownby. And it's like, okay, you've got five names here in this row. You have multiple choice. Okay, which one of these is a certified psychedelic guide? Jadrin Ownby?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
For real. Oh, he used to be a Mormon. That somehow makes sense.
All right. So, Jadrin, I want to talk about, you know, I have told the story yesterday when we were together, when we went to the lodge and Michelle's like, oh, how'd you meet? And then I started telling the story. I'm like, I don't even remember the circumstance of events, how this really happened. And usually I remember these things really well. But so like to give a little background for the listener. And then this is going to be the course of our discussion. We're going to cover a lot of stuff from here and go into more detail. But so I've been on this kick for a little while. You know, I live in Oregon. You live in Oregon. We only met like a week or two ago. And I've been like, oh, we should open a psychedelic assisted therapy center specifically designed for Mormons to confront religious trauma. And I had this thought, and I talked to Cody, I talked to other people about it, about, and we got some momentum on it, and it was, and we talked to like even a potential investor, and it had all this cool stuff going on with it. And it happened really after I had a chance encounter on a plane with somebody who basically told me that this is something you should pursue. And so anyway, in doing that, one of the things I wanted to do was do some research. Yeah, you see these headlines in the news that say, oh, there are thousands of people on wait lists to get psychedelic assisted therapy in Oregon. And I'm like, I don't know if that's really true. From the little bit that I've heard from people, I don't know if that's really true. Let me do some research. So I start to look into it. And then I also, I start to look at all the guides, see when they're available online as much as I can find out. And then I'm like, oh, some of these people do religious trauma. I'm going to reach out to all these people because I want to have some of them on the podcast potentially. And then you were one of the people that found one of the listed guides online that mentioned that you do religious trauma therapy or guided sessions for religious trauma. And I'm like, okay, I'll reach out to him. I reach out to you. And then you're like, yeah, I'll be up for an interview. Let's talk. I'm coming back from Utah right now. And I'm like, you're coming back from Utah? So, and then we have a conversation. We meet up at a coffee shop. We talk for a couple hours, and then, we realized we got a lot of overlap and actually had the same idea for not necessarily making a facility, but doing something else to help connect people to existing facilitators. So that's the background on it. Is that more or less, although you don't know from my perspective, is that more or less how it happened?
Yeah, I mean, that feels like how you got in contact with me. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, that's all real. That all happened, folks. We can vouch for this. I'm like some of the facts up top.
All right. So I'm going to start with this question. So for like a year, okay, I consistently get these headlines. Obviously, Google knows me better than they know myself, better than I know myself. And so these headlines show up. They're like designed for me. And I keep getting this same headline that's like, well, there are thousands of people on these wait lists to go to psychedelic assisted treatment centers in Oregon. Is that the case? What have you seen so far? What's your thought on how much demand is there for psychedelic assisted therapy?
Really weird. So there is demand, but there's no right now. Nobody knows. The only ones that people know about are the ones that have been in the news. So specifically the one, I think it's called Epic Healing, is probably the one that was referenced in that article. They do have a very long wait list. They are doing like one session per day, and they're doing it, they have only one or two people working there. They do have a long list, but because there's a provision in the law, there's lots of provisions in Oregon law trying to keep capitalism from eating this, so that they can't be advertised like normal businesses. So it's up to the facilitators themselves to advertise. Long story short, there would be lines if people knew. There would be thousands of people deep, but right now, if you wanted to trip, we could trip this weekend.
Okay. All right. That's what I found myself when I started calling facilities to get to a little bit of background research. And the first facility I called, I started talking, and I asked them like 30 questions, and I just got the feeling. Actually, I didn't even get the feeling. They told me, I'm like, how long do I need to wait before I can have a session if I wanted one? And they said, oh, we could get you in the next few weeks. And then I kind of asked a little bit more clearly than that. And they're like, oh, we can get you next week. And it's like, wait, now it's going down. Like, how early can you really get? Oh, we can get you at the end of this week. And it's like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, this demand is a little bit different. But then it starts to be like, shouldn't there be demand for this? And why isn't there? And you're talking about how there are all these regulations about people, how people can advertise for it. And so you personally, or the centers, tell me, like, where is the line as far as is understood right now on advertising?
So, yeah, the centers just aren't allowed to advertise in like a normal way. I don't think they're actually allowed to advertise like on most channels. It's very, very hard because it's kind of like, you know, it's like technically they're trafficking drugs, technically. So they can't advertise in a lot of ways like that, just like you couldn't make advertisements for weed. But on another level, they're trying to, like I said, keep capitalism out of this as much as they can. So there's just a lot of things that are preventing any word from getting out. And so it's up to facilitators to kind of market themselves as available. And so most facilitators have their own websites, but yeah, right now there's just no way. Nobody knows that mushrooms are legal in Oregon. Technically, you can come to Oregon and buy mushrooms legally and you can sit in a room and have an experience.
Okay. So
not just decriminalized.
Now, mushrooms are legal now and you can go in a room and have an experience with a legally certified guide, or you could do it by yourself. And so if you can advertise yourself, sure, you can make a website, but like, can you make a billboard? Can you just put your face on a billboard and say, like, call me?
I've thought of it. Yeah, I think I actually might do that. I might put one up by my house as a joke. But yeah, I might put one up by my house with my face on it that just says, do mushrooms with me in a room.
Okay. I mean, for real, like,
I've for real thought of that. Yes. And I'm pretty sure I can. Yes.
Okay. I mean, So before we have the billboard, right now, at least we have a podcast where you can advertise your services and we can have a little conversation about this. I won't say that this is a long ad. That's not what I'm implying. But this can also function as a way that people can learn about you and reach out to you without having to go through a clinic and confusing places to find you online, whatever it is. It's like, Jadron is available right here and we'll probably guide you somewhere to contact him as a result of this. But before we get into all of that, I'm curious, you know, it's clear, or maybe if it isn't clear by now, you have a Mormon background. And so, tell me a bit about how you grew up, because, you know, getting into psychedelics from a Mormon background is a big jump. And so what is your background and how were you? Let's just start. Yeah. Where did you grow up and what was a Mormon life when you were growing up?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I was born in Boise, Idaho. We were pretty Mormon. My family is, they're both my parents are converts. So I don't have an extended Mormon family like a lot of Mormons. So I'm different in that way. There's a couple of ways that I'm different from stereotypical Mormons. It's actually funny. Like, my name is silly, but I have to, or, you know, different. And I have to, people learn when I'm Mormon, they assume it's a culturally Mormon name, like Moroni or something. And I have to explain that it's not, it's just different. So I grew up there. So kind of like, yeah, it's not quite Utah. It's Boise, right? So it's a little bit different, but I'm still pretty big ward, pretty big. I remember pretty big primary, did the whole program. I Cub Scouts, we moved to Utah when I was 8 or 9, lived in Davis County. I worked at Lagoon. Like I said, the whole program, did it all. Teachers president, priests president. I can do the sacrament prayer still. I famously did my Eagle project, but didn't, I was a bit rebellious. I was too rebellious. By that point I was too rebellious and I refused to turn it in.
Okay.
So in my mind I earned it, but after that I was like, I don't need the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah. So that's so I've always sort of been me.
Okay. Okay. I can see that. I relate to that. I think the main detail that you forgot to mention that you mentioned to me before that shows that you're really Mormon is that you went to EFY.
Oh, for sure. I went to AFY.
Oh, what's AFY? I don't even know what that is.
Okay. So so EFY is all like church camp for a week. AFY, there's three. And for those who don't know, hey, there's three. There's EFY, AFY, and OYA. OYA is full-blown camping. EFY is full-blown inside. AFY is a little bit camping, a little bit inside. So we had a couple of days where it was like EFY, and then we also went rafting.
Okay, okay.
This was at BYU, Idaho. This was at BYU, Idaho, and I went 2 years in a row.
Okay, so...
I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
When you go from... living a Mormon lifestyle, being the teacher's quorum president and all these things, and then sometime between being a teacher and doing your Eagle project, that you had a little bit of an awakening, or you just came to yourself or whatever it is, where it's like, I'll do my Eagle project, but I don't need the little piece of metal or the little badge or whatever it is. What was happening to you?
Yeah.
What was happening to, as far as an awakening, and where was this awakening coming from?
It was art based, which is why we're so good at policing art as a as a culture. But we, so I got, it was music and it was stand-up comedy. It was George Carlin. It was George Carlin for me, weirdly enough. I remember like at this time I would like, I would skip seminary and go watch Carlin specials on my phone, Netflix back in the day for early Netflix streaming. Things like music, like System of a Down, like literally was like a mind opening thing. Like they're trying to build a prison for you and me to live in. What I was learning about how to think, that was basically what was happening to me, is I was getting good at learning how to think critically about things. And whenever I would apply any of that to the church, it would just go, and would just kind of, it would break. And they would say, well, we have to use the special rule. And so and the special rules,
you know, it's funny because you're like, you know, art and music were the things that opened you up. And then the art that you talk about is George Carlin, which I really like, you know, that's because you think like, oh, art, oh, Jackson Pollock or whatever, you know, and like, how did a Jackson Pollock painting open you up or whatever? It's like, no, the artist, George Carlin.
And the artist, George Carlin. Yes.
But it's true. It's true. You know, and it's funny because I watched Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure a few weeks ago with my kids and my older daughter. I said, "Who's your favorite character in the movie?" After we watched it, and she's like, "The one guy with the ponytail and the beard." Well, Rufus, he was your favorite character in the movie. All right,
Rufus is the man. Rufus knows everything.
I want to talk about music for a sec. So System of a Down was out after, you know, I was finished with high school. I didn't really get into System of a Down, but what I got into in high school, and I'm curious if you had overlap with this, is I had a kind of a secret super appreciation or fandom for Tool. Did you listen to Tool?
Okay, this is very funny. So I know that I love Tool. There's a couple of bands that I say that I'm a future fan of. I'm a future Tool fan and I'm a future Fish fan. I was actually supposed to go see Tool like literally last month, and I was going to do acid at Tool and I missed it because of something very unfortunate. But yes, I have a special date with Tool. I'm going to buy the album and listen to it tripping. And I know Tool is a band that every song I've ever listened to, I've liked, and I've literally just saved for a rainy day.
Okay. All right. I respect that. But also Tool is you're younger than me, you know, so Tool is like old music, but although they're still creating music and touring and all that. So I feel you on that. Tool was the first album that I bought that had a parental advisory sticker on it, and I felt really guilty.
Hell yeah.
But
psychedelic too.
It's crazy. I mean, they're overtly so, and it's and that was a music that really spoke to me, but I didn't know how to deal with it, because here you're talking about how music broke Mormonism open for you, or broke it down, or however you want to say it. But like for me, I was, you know, I talked to you the other day, how I'd always been conflicted about Mormonism, like going way back when I didn't accept it for what it was. And so when I'd listen to Tool and I'd really relate to what they're talking about and singing about what their music is and how it makes you feel, I would like be like, well, this is contrary to the gospel or whatever, and I shouldn't be listening to this, but I really like this. And I tried to make their concepts like work within Mormonism or something like that. And it was like just this whole big old acrobatics thing, mental gymnastics, trying to do this. But like, I had a different approach. Like I couldn't just accept the music for what it was. I still had to try to make it work. But you were able to somehow take the music and the art and like use that to, you know, as a hammer against Mormonism. I didn't get to that point with it. Like, was it slow, or was it like, or did you just accept the message, or did you question it when you were receiving it from like System of a Down?
Well, like it's okay. So like every piece of art, whatever it is, right, is just trying to like show you a perspective. Right. And so I would just be like, that's a thing. And then I would just like take that and I'm just, you know, put it in my pocket. And then if it's the thing came up again, I would check and see like what I had on that thing. You know what I mean? And be like, oh yeah. So what do we have on any of the things that may be contrary to the church, you know? And then you kind of pull that out and you just kind of see like, all right, which thing is resonating with me right now? That was a big thing that early in the church, I was big on, I noticed, was they would tell you to do things like decide, make the decision now so that when the situation comes up, you'll already know what to do. And I was very aware, like, I was like a kid, and I was like, that seems like I don't know very much about that situation. And I think by the time I get to that situation, I'll know more things about it. So yeah, it was very, very, but so that kind of thinking, I was always just very not aware of that kind of thinking. I also read somehow there's my friend's older brother would like drip little philosophies down to us. And so somehow by some luck of God, by the time I was 15, I read 1984 and I loved it. I like absolutely loved every part of it. And I was also really into Pink Floyd at the time. And there was like some kind of connection between The Wall and 1984. And I don't know if you've even seen the movies, but the movies are really, really similar.
I haven't. Yeah.
They're really similar, like in vibe and in style. Anyway, it's very weird. That 1984 made me first. Well, I thought I was learning about America, and then I realized I was learning about like the church, right? Like it's all 1984 is just a great way to understand that you're stuck in what's called groupthink. And then the other side of that was something like Pink Floyd's The Wall, which was like showing you all the different things that could happen to you in your life that make you turn away from people and yourself and become something that you never were supposed to be in the first place. And so I was actively trying to grow up and not have that kind of thing happen, So it became just like, oh, well, when the thing comes up, I'll see how I feel about it. And then I'll do whatever it is that I feel like I should do at the time. And that's how I'll be.
All right.
That was a bad answer to that question.
No, not at all. No, it wasn't. I promise.
All right.
So, all right. Now, after high school, now you told me before, you haven't told this to the listeners. Okay. You had arrived at a point of Mormonism or at some point, like you didn't go on a mission. Now, what happened between being in the priest quorum presidency and going on a mission that you came to a point where it's like, nope, I'm not going to go on a mission. Nope, not going to do that.
Yeah, it was just that, you know, between 16 and 18, I was getting pretty good. You know, I did all kinds of things. Like I had a girlfriend and I wanted my parents to let me continue to have a girlfriend. So I decided to get my patriarchal blessing as like a bluff to prove that I wanted to go on a mission so that I could continue to have a girlfriend. And what ended up happening was I went to my patriarchal blessing and the guy only said things to me that I knew that he had just either asked my parents or asked me. It was like this incredible thing where he just talked to me only about stuff that was relevant for like the last month of my life. And I was like, oh yeah, this guy's just like a bad fortune teller. This like truly sucks. Like not only is this like probably not like this is like definitely not real. This truly sucks. My own patriarchal blessing was like the greatest shelf item of all time. And I went in there, you know, being sneaky. So of course it was. I wanted to keep having a girlfriend in high school, baby. I wanted to keep sneaking out after my shift at the ice cream store was done and go make out in my car. So that was big. And then it was just, you know, once again, it was just like all the things I was learning when I would have to bring that into the church, any context with the church, I would have to have some sort of, break with reality and apply the other rules. Sorry, too funny.
It's like you're laughing because you see me. I'm just cracking up here.
You're just laughing.
It's just like the car makeout thing. Just no, I'm laughing at the story, but it's like so I can make out with her in my car.
Oh yeah, in my car, dude, in my 1996 Pontiac Grand Prix, teal. Let's go! Awesome. I had an incense burner in there, and a little bonsai tree, and a little waterfall that had a 9-volt in it, a little 9-volt powered waterfall. My car was cool. So I guess I've always been this way. So all the things that I was learning and trying to do and just, you know, you're just becoming a person. Whenever I would get into a situation with anybody in the church, I'd have to suspend all that and do pretend again. And it was just getting harder and harder. And it was really weird because everyone around you is like a successful adult. Like they have a house, they have five kids, they're able to feed all these people. And then they go, all right, time for the magic trick. And then we all do the magic. It's so weird. And yeah, anyway, so it didn't sit good with me. And then, you know, how the church, you know, treated gay people. And then I learned about how to church. I learned about how the church treated black people. That was number one. And then I thought about how the church treated gay people. And then I thought about how the church was not accepting of really anyone ever. And and that was big because I was like, there's like almost no one that's allowed to do this. And then I just started getting into like the weeds, and it was just like, okay, so if we baptize, if every temple is baptizing people, dead people forever, and how long would it take to baptize everyone that ever lived? And that's all just so we can usher in the apocalypse. And it's just like, okay, we need to just none. This is, and then yeah, suddenly this is a pioneer cult. This is a pioneer cult. And I remember when I busted out of that, it really was this moment where I felt like I was breaking out of a box. And then all I could find was a slightly bigger box. And that was just America, which is kind of its own pioneer cult.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, that's not a question at all. It's like, you know, where did the cults end that we're a part of? So,
I know. It's a bad. Mm-hmm. The system is apparently is of a down, it would seem. I found out.
Oh, man. Okay. So now you, knowing you and having talked to you, just alluded to a bit of a psychedelic experience that you had. And I'm curious, how did you go from graduating from high school to... what happened between high school and then discovering psychedelics or discovering precursors to psychedelics? What happened?
So this is, I was so interested in it for forever. And so like my final English report was about DMT, and I tried to do DMT and I totally screwed it up. I didn't understand what I was doing. With my nose railing a bunch of DMT, what I think might be DMT. I don't even know if what I had was DMT. I got it from a kid who, anyway, doesn't matter. But I, to the B side of Sergeant Pepper's in my room, it didn't work. It just hurt. And then, so I was like, okay, so I'll figure that out later. And then, my first year in college, I was interested. I had a grandpa who was a hippie. And I was like, should I do LSD? And he was like, nah, don't worry about it. Do it later. And I was like, okay. And so I waited till I moved out. I had a roommate. He did acid. And I said, I want to watch you. And so he did acid and I watched what happened. And I did experiments on him. I made him look at pictures that were weird. I made him listen to Black Sabbath. I made him listen to Sgt. Pepper's. And we watched The Wall, the movie. And I made him watch it. And he cried and all this stuff. And we went outside. And he laughed. He rolled around in the grass and talked about how beautiful it was. And I was just like, yeah, that's all pretty interesting. But I didn't want to do it. It was weird. I was like, that's really cool. I'll probably end up doing that at some point. So I'm in college and I end up working in my freshman year, I ended up getting a job from one of my professors and kind of dropping out of school and having a condo that ended up just becoming a party fort for me and my friends, to learn how to drink and have sex and do drugs responsibly. And we were doing that. So I bought that place right after my 20th birthday, right after I turned 20, I had a condo. Which is the most dangerous thing in the world. I had a party in that condo every weekend for 5 years. And about halfway through that, I was at a place. I met a girl. I complimented her music. And she said, do you do acid? And I was like, you know what? No, but I'm thinking about doing acid very soon. And she goes, you should do it. And when a pretty girl tells you to do acid, I don't know if a pretty girl's ever told you to do acid, but if you just go do the acid. And so I on my birthday, I at about 7 o'clock at night, I took a tab of acid by myself. It was incredible. I was sitting in my living room and the ceiling turned into bones that looked like alien. It looked like the aliens versus predator apocalypse war had happened on my ceiling. It was bones of aliens and predators. And I was having all of these thoughts, just a rush of infinite thought. And then the only thing I could be conscious of, I was like, man, I wish I wasn't the first person to have ever done this. I wish someone had done this before. And then the voice then said, downstairs, you have a small room with a bunch of cool art in it that also has a lava lamp and a bunch of quote unquote psychedelic music. The drug you ate is a psychedelic. Go see what that means. And I went down into the room and I learned about everything, and I lived and died 1,000 times. And I thought, wow, if I could get anybody into this room, they would have a wonderful time and they would change their whole life. And so I started to have these like acid parties, and I would trip out my house, and all the rooms would have a different sound system in it. That would have a different colored lights. One room would be pink and have electronic music. One room would be blue and green and have a different kind of a whole thing. And there'd be tunnels with glow paint and sheets to crawl through to get to the next place. And we just learned. It was basically like learn how to operate your meat suit. It was a bunch of people who all had grown up in Utah. Not everybody was grown up a Mormon. But almost everybody had. We even had someone who was in like Warren Jeffs's cult. This, by the way, I should say, was in St. George. So we had a lot of contact with the Paligs. We have a slang for them. They're called Paligs. Paligs down in southern Utah. I used to sell them cars. They have, I don't know if you know, down there they have these things called Lost Boys and Lost Girls.
Yeah, where I watched a documentary on one. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so a kid will run away. And so one of our friends was one of these lost girls. She worked at a restaurant with the girl who told me to do acid, who later became my girlfriend, and we fell in love because of acid. And all the other wonderful things. It was a wonderful time. Anyway, the point is, so this person, so she had seven moms. She had 50 siblings, I think. And it was, yeah, I just watched everybody change. I watched everybody change. In the coolest ways, everybody became themselves. Relationships that ended needed to end. Relationships that began were new. It was just everything about it. It was just so magic. And then I just, you know, I was doing psychedelic or helping other people do psychedelics once a week for a little while, then maybe once a month for a while after that. Like it was a lot. It was quite a lot.
All right.
I feel like I'm rambling.
Okay, no, you're not rambling. I feel like not even asking you any more questions and just seeing where this goes. all right. So you basically, what you've described is pretty early on, you do acid yourself. You have this amazing experience. You realize you have all this art and this music that goes along with psychedelics. Some voice tells you to go experience this. And then you go down into your basement where you have the collection, all this stuff. Then you realize what psychedelics are really telling you, or whatever it is. You say you lived 1,000 times, you died 1,000 times, died 1,000 deaths, and that experience. And then you start to introduce other people to it. And it sounds like, is it fair to say that you were more or less becoming an impromptu guide before guides were even a thing, or even before you knew what they were, and you were specifically guiding Mormons from an early age?
Yes, and I have to give credit where it's due. The girl who told me to do acid, who was later my girlfriend, she came over. So after I did the acid, after I had my experience, I went back to the place where I met her, and I go, I did that, and she said, hey, do you want to do it together? And she came over to my house, and she brought an extra little set of lights. She had a box. She had a box of stuff, and she had. And that was my first tip off. That it was another big tip off. It's like you could plan for this in a cool way. And she had cool lights. She had things to paint with, things to draw with. She had all of these like little things. So she sort of facilitated me. So we did a trip together, and she facilitated me almost. And it was actually from that I learned. I had my first kind of brush with an ego death. I remember it was to shine on you, crazy diamond, and And I was weeping these tears that I'd never felt. They were good and they were bad. And I knew, and it, I had this beautiful vision of this perfect little flower in this field. And the flower was clearly me. And it was growing. But as it was growing and becoming more beautiful, it also was beginning to die. And it was this beautiful, perfect thing. And I, and it was from that exact moment when I, that was my big first little, like I said, brush with an ego death. And because once again, I wasn't me, I was this flower. And I was, and just at the, it was this, you know, just at the point when you reach your, that's when the death happens. And it was this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. And what was the question?
Oh, the question was how did you I was saying you more or less became a facilitator at a young age, specifically Mormons.
And this was all happening, and I was very much being facilitated by this person. Her name is Cedar, and she didn't do much, but her energy and how she held me, I realized that there was a thing. There was a thing. It wasn't just the drugs. It was how you choose to play with them and how you choose to interact with them and what mindset that you bring to them. You can really channel like something that's so far beyond yourself, and it is sort of magic. And that's what it is. It's facilitating is a good word for it, because you're not doing almost anything. You're just allowing a thing to happen. Sometimes I refer to myself as a metaphysical wheel grease.
You dropped that a couple of times when I've been around you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
that's for me that's old news, but for the listeners, yeah, that is, I promise nobody's ever heard that one before.
Yeah. It's like that. It's helping someone else get out of their own way so that the thing can happen to them is kind of what the art of it is.
Okay. And
I learned it
curious.
We kind of learned it together.
Okay. So that is, I've never heard it explained this way. Okay? And I've also never heard ego death explained that way, because that's a really interesting thing where you become something else, and that's the death of your ego. Like you became a flower, and I'm like, what is ego death? Have I experienced that before in a psychedelic experience? I'm not sure. And so that's an interesting concept. Then the facilitating part, where you are there to facilitate the experience for the other person, let it happen. Now, look, psychedelics have been legal in Oregon for about a year. There are around 200 facilitators right now. You were number around 50. Is that right? Around the 50th to be certified. Okay. So, tell me about the school that you went to become a, no, I'm skipping a lot of history. We could go on forever. We're 40 minutes into this. I want to keep going. We're going to go well over an hour, I'm sure. But I also want to get to like, what's the meat of this? Because we got some things that we're trying to get to. And I also don't want to skip things, but here we go, skipping things. Okay. So how did you get to a point where you're going to school? Now, not how did you get to that point, but when you're in school, actually, how did you get to the point of going to school? I want to hear about that.
Okay. All right. So I decided to leave Utah at some point that we're skipping. Close your eyes, what works? Oregon works for a certain amount of things. I came for the weed and I stayed for the mushroom. Was basically what happened is I wanted to get into the weed industry because I was sick of St. George, Utah. I was kind of like, I did everything I could do in St. George, Utah. Although, man, which by the way, can we just, I had a 4-bedroom condo in St. George that I bought when I was a 20-year-old for under $100,000. The world is a completely different place. Back in my day. Anyway, so back in my day, So I moved to Portland, and I remember one of the first times I came out of a grocery store, there was a guy and he just kind of like slyly was like, you want to sign a petition to get mushrooms legal? And I was like, yeah. And I signed the petition. I kind of stayed involved. I went to see Paul Stamets speak, that year. And it was for raising money to get this bill, this measure 109. Written at the time. And I remember that they had said that it was a big deal that it's not just professionals like therapists or doctors that are going to be able to do this. We recognize that this is a skill that people can develop without necessarily being a professional. And I was like, hey, that's really cool. Cause that's a lot like the thing I was doing back in Utah. And And so I just kind of kept my eye on it. I never thought that I would be a guide, really. It's funny thing. I was in sales and I was in other things. And I just thought that I would be in some sort of, maybe some other part of the industry. So then cut to last year. And I see that the, when in 2021, when the bill passed, I was like, okay, let's see what happens when it legalizes. And I had a bunch of kind of brutal stuff happen, kind of all at once, where I lost my job. Some crazy stuff was happening with my family. My ex had an overdose on the bad drugs. My roommate, had a suicide attempt, and my grandpa had a stroke, and I lost my job. I took care of my grandpa for a little while. And when I came back, I was sitting there and I was like, how come I feel like I've been very busy my entire life? And we skipped a lot, but you can tell I've been busy. I feel like I've been busy my entire life. How come I have absolutely nothing to show for this? And my first thought was, you have your friends, dummy, who you've been investing in. And it's these people who I was doing, you know, we called it doing the Lord's work, but all the people that were with me doing the Lord's work. And I was like, okay, so first I'll just talk to them. And so then, and so I just started talking about this, and I was thinking, and I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Why not me? I'll just go try to be a guide. All of my friends, and honestly, all of my friends and my family supported me. I didn't make a legit dollar for 6 months this year. My friends who are waiters floated me thousands of dollars. My friends who just have normal jobs. Nobody's a professional. One of them is. Hey, Austin. Everybody, we're just the crew. It's just a bunch of normal people. I should have something more to show for this. And it was like, you have your friends that you've been investing in, and they basically encouraged me. And through my friends and family, I got, not only did they put me through the school, but I was able to live the entire year and not die. And now I've just completely changed my whole life. And now we're in an above ground world where we can talk about this and we can be candid about it. We can be for real about it. I've been able to become so much more honest with my whole family, just about who I am and why I am the way that I am, just over the last year, just because this has become, you know, acceptable in some way. So it's a really beautiful and exciting time.
I mean, isn't it? I mean, I talk about with anyone, anywhere, basically, but like, I happen to live in Oregon, so it's a lot easier to talk about it. But it's, how crazy is it that you can openly talk about this here? There's really like no shame. You don't even have to be concerned. You can talk about psychedelics pretty much with anybody here in Oregon.
Totally. It's like very, and people want to know about it, and it's really cool, and it's fun. It's fun. And you know what? These people don't talk about it. It's wholesome.
Yeah.
It's wholesome. It's good, clean fun. That's what I always call it whenever we're out doing the Lord's work. I always say, it's just good, clean fun. Just good, clean fun. We're just, you know, identifying colors and shapes. It's just so fun.
So I want to go back to facilitating, okay, and to bring this back to going to school, because even yesterday when we were talking about this, when we went out to lodge, I reference that again. Okay, we're having this conversation there with a couple of people there, talking about different techniques that are taught in different schools. That there seem to be some schools that are more shamanic, and some schools that are more Western, if you want to call it that. I don't know what the word is, or scientific, maybe, or therapeutic based. What kind of school did you personally go to?
I went to a very Western-y school. It was called Clinical Cognitive Facilitator Training. Okay, so other places are called things like Subtle Winds or the Alma Institute, InnerTrek. These are names of other facilitation programs in Oregon. Mine was the Clinical Cognitive Facilitator Training. It was actually pretty awesome because my instructor was a nurse, had been a nurse for 40 years, and who was just also happened to be psychedelic. And she had some sort of, I think she was one of the first people to have a degree in cannabis as well. And so she was very, very fun. And she basically, so the main thing that I didn't have, she was actually able to give me, which is a lot of stuff about chemistry and pharmacology and how drugs interact with each other. And, you know, that was not something that I was great at. That was probably one of my not super strong suits. So for some people, that's great. Some people, so for instance, I had already been doing this underground for a really long time. So they basically at my school, they teach you how to follow the law here in Oregon and do this legally, and how mostly how drugs interact with each other. And that was pretty much it. Other places seem to have like I have a friend who did it. His school, which he did, had other problems with, not saying any school. None of the schools seem to be perfect. His school, though, brought someone from Peru who was a shamanic elder, and he was able to form a relationship with her. And now, Ecuador. And he's going to be able to like be formed a relationship with her. He's going to be able to go down and like do stuff with them, do some like real shaman stuff. So if you already kind of have a practice the way I sort of did, it was totally fine. But if I needed to learn how this works, I would maybe choose a different program.
Okay. Okay. All right. So it sounds like your program was not giving you, your school did not give you a guided protocol to follow. It seems that they taught you the rules and how, and they also taught you about the combination of different drugs. So you had the chemical knowledge and all of that and how it reacts to the body, but they weren't teaching you like, this is what you do in step one, step two, this is what you do when there's an emergency. And this is how you get somebody to relax. This is how you get them to keep building. And
no, because weirdly enough, nobody knows.
Okay.
in the Western sense, people know, people who do this know, people in other cultures know. It's all like street level knowledge, basically. And nothing's been studied. Everything that's been studied has been pretty general. Like those Johns Hopkins study you've heard about, those are basically all of the Western studies that we have on stuff. So the idea, and also the idea that there could be a step one, a step two, and a step three is very like, that's very American, and we want it to be that way. And it's kind of like that, but it's not. It's interesting, but like, honestly, like from an academic perspective, we as a culture don't know what is happening, why it's happening, how real it is. We don't really like know any, like we know that, like we know that touching someone's, the bottom of someone's feet can sometimes make them feel grounded. But that's all. Like, for instance, like most people, like every person in every study about psilocybin has listened to the exact same music. And that music, by the way, is like mostly classical music with like some weird couple of things popped in there at the end. But like the middle of it mostly just sounds like angels dying. And it's very weird. And I get why it sounds like angels dying, but that's not going to resonate with anybody. All this to say that uniformity isn't going to work with this very often. It's very much about feel, so much so that my preparation for a session is oftentimes just getting out of my own way and being so present I can't think of anything else. Whereas if I were to try to prepare, that would be, and say like, okay, I'm going to play this song and then I'm going to play this song. That's too much.
Okay.
That's too much of me. That's too much of me thinking that I'm going to give someone the thing, the magic, which I'm not.
Now, you told me that music plays a big role in this, and this is in another conversation that we had, that music and developing a playlist are a key component of the psychedelic experience. So if you're not getting in the way of choosing music, tell me, what is the process of choosing, of developing a playlist for somebody for a psychedelic experience?
So music, so certain music is created with the intention that if you were to listen to it on psychedelics, you're going to hear things that you wouldn't hear normally. Some music is like this, and you can really tell. Others is really, really subtle. So when I was having my first initial experience, I was listening to albums that I'd heard a million times before, but I was hearing them, not only just like perceiving them in a new way, but like hearing stuff that like voices that I could now, that sounded at first like, and now I can fully understand them and they were telling me a thing. And like, or like the sound of like, and like, that's actually like a snare drum played backwards. And like, when that happens, my brain almost like detects it and goes, what? And like, it like wakes it up on different levels. And so anyway, all this to say that when you start to get good at listening to psychedelic music and listening for what makes a psychedelic, what makes music psychedelic in the first place, then you can choose, then you can help guide someone's journey where they'll be supported and not distracted by the music, I guess I should say. I'm trying to think of a good example. Sometimes I play the Beatles' Yellow Submarine soundtrack. Now, half of that is the George Martin classical instrumentals. Those are super weird. They don't have any words. But they have a narrative arc. There's like a beginning part that's okay, and then there's a part that it gets scary, and there's a part where you feel good again. And that's a really big part of the psychedelic experience. Big part of the psychedelic experience is you're going to feel every feeling that you can feel. So during the psychedelic experience, the albums that I'm going to play are going to have that that spectrum of emotion in them, and they're going to have, and that way that however it is that you need to feel, you get the opportunity to feel that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Lots of things there. I mean, just the arc of music in general, or the arc of an album when it's a concept album, can follow, bring you along peaks and valleys of different emotions. And that's going to help you through the psychedelic experience through just confronting different emotions are going to, they're bound to happen during the experience. Now, if you make because you know, a journey can last 7 hours plus. How conscious of you are you of making an arc with the playlist itself, or is it just, it kind of evens out in the end?
I'm pretty conscious of it. Weirdly, the beginning albums and the end albums are usually interchangeable by the end. I don't know where we're going to start. I have an idea of where we're going to start, but I do decide literally once they like sit down. And I have an idea of where we're going to end, but that, very rarely do I get to that ending that I think I'm going to get to. But yeah, so I'm catching there. Yeah. Cause I can basically, I'm in there, I'm meditating, I'm trying to feel as many of their emotions as I can feel, and kind of using the music, like I said, kind of like as a guide of what's happening, you can kind of focus. Cause once again, they're going to have all the emotions. So you might as well, if you get them in a certain order, then at least you know a little bit of what's happening. And then you can tell if they're being overtaken by another emotion. And then if they are being overtaken by another emotion, what can we do to support that and go with that? So then the next album will maybe, I'll have thought that we needed to confront this one thing, but now this other emotion took hold during the first album. And now we're going to zig where we would have zagged, and we're going to go into that other emotion that seems so interesting.
Okay.
So I'm going to try to watch.
So you're evolving your playlist as you go, depending on how you're feeling and what you're observing taking that into account.
Yeah, how you're breathing, how you're moving, if you're laughing, if you look like you might want to die. Stuff like
that. So, okay. This is a big jump that I'm making right here, but I imagine that you've probably, or you possibly, journeyed more Mormons than most guides, and if not, I don't know if there's another guide that may have journeyed more Mormons than you, but let's not jump too far, but like, look, have you found that there are commonalities in the experiences that Mormons have, or similar types of, I don't like the word trauma, I use it but I don't really like it, but certain things that they encounter when they're having a psychedelic experience, do you feel that there are commonalities in these experiences
that Mormons specifically have?
Because if you're like, oh, I'm guiding a Mormon right now, I'm anticipating that we're going to come across this and this.
Oh yeah, there's going to be like a lot of like shame stuff probably, and a lot of a big thing that we prep, and I do bring it up with Mormons a lot, is that like you need to feel, when we go into the room, you need to feel all right to be vulnerable. You're gonna have the thought like, I am I being weird? That just forget about that. That whole internal I need to be normal thing. That's obviously not specific to Mormons, but that is something that I will hit a lot with them. We hate our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely hate our bodies, Mormons. And sometimes discovering how beautiful our bodies are, that's something to be wary of. And a lot, if you're repressed in any way in that lane, watch for that. Watch for seeing that feeling of literally that feeling of eternal love reflected through your own personal beauty and body.
Okay. All right. That's really
very weird, which is not something that we're used to being able to see. Many people, when they're in the bathroom, especially, I'll go, how do you look? And they'll go crazy. And I'll go, take your shirt off. And they'll go, whoa. A guy came out, someone who we're going to interview, actually, who had the DMT experience and then the other mushroom experience. He came out of the room at one point, just says, I've never seen my chest.
Oh.
Never looked at it once. And we just don't look at ourselves and feel ourselves. It's just not something we're okay with. And that's, you know, the stereotype of the hippies running around naked. Think that. And Mormons are real uptight about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're in Oregon, you're in Portland, you are a legally certified guide. Legally certified facilitator, you know, if that's the best word we're going to use. How often have you had experience doing Mormons since you've been a legally certified facilitator?
Not in an above ground setting.
Okay.
Although I am affiliated with some Mormons, but no, I had one person, my person this week was from a high demand religion, and a bit of a cult as well. And so we connected a lot. There's a lot of similarities there. A lot of stuff was based in shame. A lot of stuff was based in judging other people. Oh, yeah, that's another big one. Judgment. Hey, we're the most judgmental people on planet Earth, the Mormons.
No, but we're so nice. So no, we're not judgmental. We're so nice.
But we have to we have to run everything through the filter of which kingdom will this put me in? But so it's we have to judge everything, and it's so funny. But yeah, I think I said this to you the other day, but this was like a revelation that I had while on psychedelics once, was that it was literally that judge not lest ye be judged. What does it mean? Well, it means that if I don't judge myself, and if I don't judge other people, I will stop judging myself, and then the concept of judgment will melt away from my reality. And once I realized that, I stopped judging other people and I stopped feeling judgment in general. And now I'm freer to be myself. And that's like an amazing thing. And like, so that's how, and you know, that's a very, how Mormon is that?
Okay.
how Mormon is being on acid and being like, oh Jesus, you was right about that. Of course. It melts away. It goes away from reality. It's, you know, that's the real thing. Yeah. Anyway.
So you can help people get saved?
Yeah, definitely going to get saved. Definitely. I mean, well, so I facilitated what's called a service center. So I'm going to serve. You're going to get service.
Okay. I was going to ask. Okay. So when you were doing a lot of underground stuff, I assume it was with a lot of younger people that were your age. Like, you're at an age, and if you're dealing with this, again, as an assumption, it might not be true, but if you're dealing with people that are in their early 20s and they're Mormon and they're willing to do psychedelics, then they probably had the strength to leave when, maybe that's not the best way to say it, but they chose to leave when they're 18. And so they're already in a mind space where they're willing to try that. They may already be a little bit malleable to or open to changing. My question is there any hope for a Mormon that's 40 or 50 years old?
Yeah, no, there totally, there is. I think that there totally is. You're right. That is mostly who I was dealing with. Like I said, I had a party at my house every single weekend for 6 years. And yeah, so that's who was around. It was people who were down. But yes, I think, and it's going to be gentler. It's going to be softer. Here's what it takes. It takes, weirdly enough, it takes humility. And it takes, we have to have like radical self-empathy, which is another thing that we're not good at because we're so judgy, especially of ourselves. But if a person really wanted to confront their, like, not like the choices they've made, but like how they make choices, and are ready to see what stands, like, see, it's kind of like that thing, like, I remember President Hinckley used to say something like you should question the Book of Mormon, because if it doesn't stand on its own, then we are, I mean, they don't say that anymore because obviously people checked, but like, I think that come and see who's in here. Come see if it's Mormon Jesus. Come see what it looks like, what it feels like. Come, because like, I know that like the thing that I'm doing feels probably like greater than or equal to like the best experiences people are having in the temple.
I think that's pretty safe to say.
Yeah, greater than or equal
to.
I'm talking Kirkland. It's come see how full your cup is, you know, like see, here's a good way to check and see if your house is built upon a rock. And other such primary stuff.
Okay. But like, is it safe to say you're going to find out your house wasn't built upon a rock?
Well, here's the cool thing. You're going to find a bunch of cool things about yourself. You're going to find ways that you trust yourself and you love yourself and that helped you become the person you are. You're also maybe going to find that like just some of the things that you think don't make sense. And, you know, which is so funny because we're talking about like getting into a world where like everything is upside down and obviously nothing makes sense. And it's wind up chattery teeth. And you get in there, but like, I can't explain it other than, man. Okay, so this is going to be a bit of a stretch, but okay, the Muppets.
Okay.
Muppets are awesome. We're hanging out, you and me. We're watching the Muppets. We're listening to the Muppet soundtrack. The Muppets are cool. Rainbow Connection. Muppets are cool. I tried listening to the Muppets on acid, and it was like too much. It was like a mirror within a mirror within a mirror. It was like two, and it sounded like a monster. And it just sat, it was like, oh, because it's actually not real. It's actually a puppet. It's actually not real. And that's, and it was like, it kind of like that, like you kind of come see which parts of you are a Muppet.
Okay. you wrapped that up quicker than I expected and much more solidly than I anticipated. So. So, let's say a Mormon is listening to this, whatever stage of Mormonism, because I imagine there are going to be people that are like, oh, I've completely rejected the church, it has nothing to do with me anymore. And then there are going to be people that are like, no, I am a full blown Mormon. And you're talking about psychedelics? Wait, and then their interest is piqued, you know, because it can't help but be piqued when they're hearing this. How can you tell, like, as an individual, or what is a guidepost that you can give somebody that's like, yeah, maybe you should consider using psychedelics, especially for a Mormon? At what stage could somebody be to be like, is there any indicator that's like, yeah, consider using it?
Yeah, if you're at the point where you can hold a questioning belief in your head without dismissing it immediately as a bad thought, like if you go, I wonder why we don't accept gay people. And you can kind of keep that in your head, but it's going like, whatever the company line is, you just think the company line and it goes away. if you're at the point where you can like have conversations like in like even with yourself in a mature way, you're probably all right. If you see two men kiss and you go, probably not ready.
Okay, that's a litmus test. Two men kissing, it's a litmus test. What is your reaction?
Just an idea. If ideas that you don't agree with physically repulse you or make it so you have to just immediately brush them away, you should do it then because you're gonna have a really rough time. But you're gonna have a rough time. I think to prepare for something like this. So, if you're at the point where you push away ideas, because during the psychedelic experience, you're going to have, like I said, the full range of emotion. You're going to have all the ideas, every idea everywhere all at once. So if there are parts of you that you are pushing away actively, if you're actively turning off and putting in a box, thoughts and emotions, those things will come straight to the forefront and they will live there for the entire time, and you will have a really uncomfortable, rough time, and it will probably also drive you farther away from being open. It'll probably actually close you off more.
Okay.
So yeah, if you are a closed off person, it's a little bit more dangerous than if you're open.
Okay. I feel like as you're talking about this, I think there's probably a succinct way of saying this came to my mind, is that, you know, we hear the word cognitive dissonance a lot now. That's like a very buzzy word.
Cognitive dissonance. I mean, that's the slogan of Utah. Okay. I mean, mental yoga. We're the best at it. Welcome to Utah.
But if you are, in a way, I feel like if you're experiencing cognitive dissonance where you're like, you're acknowledging that like this doesn't make sense, then you're doing some thinking there. You know, you're not just like automatically going into this and automatically, you know, supporting or denying this. If you're in a point where you're like, oh, this is making me uncomfortable, is it fair to say that if you're experiencing some degree of cognitive dissonance, then maybe a psychedelic experience could be good for you because you're at that point?
Yeah. I think that's probably like a sign that the ice is melting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, maybe, yeah, like keep going in that. Like, okay. Like for instance, am I ready for the psychedelic experience? It's like, what would I say if I said we were just going to go sit in a room and not talk for 2 hours? Could you handle that? Would that seem okay to you? Because there's another thing that Americans are great at, but Mormons especially, because it's like, once again, Mormons are hyper America. Everything about America, Mormons, super, super. So Americans have that puritanical work ethic, and we're always busy and we're always trying to do stuff. And Utah is a beehive. And we are so bad at sitting alone with our thoughts. We're actually kind of told that it's bad, right? Like it's all this, like the stuff that comes up when you sit by yourself is all like natural man stuff, mm-hmm. right? It's all like, it's like, and so, and a lot of this is about like giving your monkey mind stuff to do to avoid the natural man. And so, how comfortable are you sitting with yourself? How comfortable are you with yourself in general? How open are you to new ideas, and how open are you to you?
Okay. And it also seems like something that I'm picking up on, and whether you're consciously describing this or not, but it seems like a preparation for taking psychedelics or having a psychedelic experience would be meditation. And if you're meditating consistently, or you try it out for a while, that is a good way to prepare to have a psychedelic experience.
That is a good way to prepare for the psychedelic experience. I didn't understand meditating until I had my psychedelic experience, and then I developed a meditation practice. So, whichever way you get in, it'll work. But they do go together.
Okay.
I got into sensory deprivation tanks after doing psychedelics, and I was able to access the psychedelic realm inside the sensory deprivation tanks, and now I'm a meditator.
Okay. So it's not a prerequisite, but they do go together, and
they go, it's the same skill set.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. So, we're over an hour now. I think we could keep talking forever, but, we're going to have more episodes of this, and we're going to talk about other things with this as well. This is just episode one of a bit of a mini series. And the next step, we're going to have, three or four more of these over the next, we're going to record a couple of them over the next week, and then we'll have a couple more, but with the intention of telling people that you can come to Oregon for the weed and you can stay for the mushrooms. Okay. And so,
let's go.
You know, that might be a slogan that we'd want to use sometime. That's a pretty good one. Have you heard that anywhere else?
Yeah, I mean, no, that's top of the dome. I've been saying that for a couple of years.
Maybe you should trademark that. So
that's right. Hey, everybody, you can say it, but you have to say that you heard it from me.
Yeah, yeah. Or they just have, or you know what? They don't have to, but if they use it, you just sue them.
That's right. That's right. Send me a nickel. If I get my nickel in the mail, we're good. I just want the acknowledgement. It's about respect. It's not about the money. It was never about the money.
All right. Well, you know what? I was wrapping this up, but I should have given you a chance. Wait. Something that we got to do is, how can people reach out to you? How do people reach out to you if they want to get in contact with you, Jadrian? And say your first and last name and spell it out, because that's a tricky name.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so we're going to have a website that you guys can go to and fill out a form and be matched with a psilocybin facilitator. I will be one of the people in that. And we'll link all that in the show notes, I'm sure. And we'll have all that stuff that'll be around. If you want to get in touch with me specifically, you can send me an email at jadrynfacilitations@gmail.com. My name, jadrynfacilitations@gmail.com. And I will email you back, and we'll have a phone call, and it'll be super fun. And we'll see if we like each other. And if not, I'll help you find someone who you do like, and it'll be great. And you can come to Oregon and do mushrooms, or Colorado, and I can meet you in Colorado, or Oakland, California, or Jamaica. If you want to fly me to Jamaica to do mushrooms with you, I will do that. Isn't that fun? I will do that. I'll come and do that.
So let's say,
wow.
Let's say hi to the Jamaican listeners right now. You know, maybe we're going to reach a new audience, huh?
Come on. Hey, listen, first of all, Jamaican listeners, we're sorry. We're bringing more white people. We're bringing more white people. We're so sorry. These ones are Mormon.
I think they've seen enough more. These Mormons are going to be different. Promise you that. Okay.
These Mormons are going to be different. They're going to have a weird look in their eye, but they're not going to try to give you a book. I promise. And if it is, it's going to be Here Now.
I started reading that last night. It's funny because I've listened to quite a few Ram Dass lectures, and it's like, Ram Dass, I feel like, memorized his own book or memorized this, because he's like word for word in certain points. I've heard him tell this before in lectures, like exact same punchline, exact same build to it. And it's like, man, anyway, now clearly the episode isn't ending, or we're dinning a couple minutes ago. I want to talk about, okay, here's a question for you. And we're going to get to this in a future episode. Okay. So this is a bit of a teaser. We're going to talk about what are the rules and regulations around psychedelics in different places, but most specifically in Oregon, because that's where Jadrian is working and he knows the rules and regulations. He also knows the rules and regulations for other places. Can somebody say that you're in Utah and you're like, I want to have a psychedelic experience, but I want to do it in Jamaica, and I want Jadrian to fly with me to Jamaica. Can you, as a Utahn, go to Jamaica, fly yourself there, and then they fly you from Portland into Jamaica, and then you, however you do it, find mushrooms down there, and then you can facilitate their experience in Jamaica? Is that like a...
That is literally what I meant. That's what I meant just now when I said that. Yes, that is 100% totally fine. And yeah, Utahns, you're allowed to go to other countries and do stuff that's legal in those countries, for sure. And now Oregon is one of those countries. But yes, you can. Yes. So Jamaica, it's legal. It's fully decriminalized. They have centers there. You've heard of Timothy Leary. His son, Zach Leary, has a place in Jamaica that you can trip at right now as well. Totally legal. And so, yes, if you want a licensed facilitator like me to fly out to Jamaica, I will do that with you. We can rent an Airbnb. We can get two Airbnbs so that I don't have to be in your Airbnb. And then, yeah, you and all your friends, you and all of your family, whatever you want it to be. That is also true for Denver. That's also true for the state of Colorado. It's wild. We live in a brave new world. So yeah, a couple of places we can all fly to, or you can just come on out to Portland. Get weird with it.
All right. And then I have, what was my last question, or one of the last, cause I'm sure I was going to have more. You personally, we can edit this out right now. Should we, or we could talk about it in this episode, because it's still an idea that we're creating right now that somebody might be coding in their garage right now that we don't know about. Okay. That we may have asked to do this. What is, okay, you mentioned that a facilitator matchmaking service. Do you want to talk about this a bit and what the idea is before it comes out? Because we're not sure exactly what's going to happen, but we kind of do. Or should we save this for another episode?
We can talk about it just a little bit. We can say that. So here's basically what it is. So we've talked at the top of the episode about how service centers aren't allowed to advertise and people don't know how to find facilitators. So this is basically going to act as a questionnaire and a bucket to find out who people are, what their needs are, and then matching them with someone with the appropriate skill set. So if you're someone with religious trauma, or if you have PTSD, CPTSD, or if you're looking to have a really good time, you can find me. There'll be other people there who basically find. We're basically facilitating for facilitators is the way to think about it.
That's okay. All right, facilitating for facilitators. This isn't live yet. We don't have the domain name. Settled on, but we got some possibilities, but that's coming in the future. If you need to find a facilitator that is right for your experiences, and then you can have a little call with them, and if they're not the right person, then you can be pointing in another direction for somebody until you find the right one. So much like finding a therapist. So
that's exactly right. And we will edit in that domain name once we decide on it. And it'll be right now.
Goodfacilitators.com. That's goodfacilitators.com. There it is. We created the pause. Wow.
So good that and I'm glad that we picked it because it's classy and fun.
I can't believe that we landed on it like that. That was perfect. It was like it came out of nowhere, and we didn't even have to get high to do it.
Nope. Clouds opened. There it was. We snagged it. It was available. The whole thing. Wow. Worked out. Awesome.
All right. So I think with that, say one more time, where can people get a hold of you by email? What is it?
Yeah. Go ahead. Shoot me an email. And actually, we're going to enter in that domain name one more time right here.
Goodfacilitators.com. That's goodfacilitators.com.
Then, or you can shoot me an email directly at jadrynfacilitations@gmail.com. jadrynfacilitations@gmail.com. Schedule a consultation call, figure out if we like each other, have fun, go to Jamaica.
All right, Jadrian, it was awesome talking to you. More to come.
Now give it. Now, hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's actually come up with an identity. Like, what's the name of the identity that you're going to read this one as?
His name is Cool Joe.
Cool Joe, baby. Here it comes, ladies and gentlemen.
The first name that came to me when you said that was Patrick, but I want to read it as Patrick.
Dude, I'll do it as Patrick. You do it as Cool Joe.
Okay.
You ready?
Maybe you start it and I'll do the next
one. Okay. All right. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. As a reminder, the very best way to support this podcast is to just head on over to patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms.
There you're going to find bonus content, fun episodes, other shit.
Girl, we're talking about shit you have not heard before.
Never. Mankind has never heard these things before. So go on over to Patreon. But we'd also love it if you gave us a review. Just head over to Apple and give us a quick love over there. Quick love. Quickie.
Just a little bit of love on Apple. Listen, if you're listening on Spotify, that's cool too. Put up a 5-star if you liked it. If you didn't, keep your mouth shut.
Just maybe put up a whoa, yo, Flavor Country.
We love Flavor Country. By the way, Mike and I also accept just free, pure money. And you can do that at Venmo. Mike, hit him with the deets.
Just put them in our pocket. Just give us some money at Mushmore, M-U-S-H-M-O-R, on Venmo, and we'll use it to buy some kombuchas. Just have a good time.
M-U-S-H-M-O-R. What up? Peace.
Give a fucking yes.